Why does it say Johnny Oldman for your thing now?
For my Skype?
Yeah.
Oh, that's my handle I go by for a lot of different things.
Yeah, like on Steam.
Uh-huh.
You're a little child. You're not an old man.
I took it up as my Xbox gamer tag long, long time ago as a sort of Johnny Old Man, Old Buddy, Old Pal.
I'll force you to listen to Shake It Off by Taylor Swift now. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 523, recorded on December 11th, 2018.
Welcome to the 523rd edition of the TV Gaming Podcast and the 356th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinser.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Fowle.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So we're going to talk about what we've been playing, and I'm going to tell you what I've been playing. Race the Sun, over and over and over again. It's now my unwindy game.
Nice. What is it?
You don't know. Okay, Race the Sun is basically a game in which you're in the spaceship, which is powered by sunlight, and the sun is setting, and you're going through this abstract landscape at a high speed, and you have to pick up power-ups, either multipliers, or green things that make you fly, or yellow things that make the sun go back up. If you're in the shade, your ship slows down. If the sun sets, the race is over. If you crash, the race is over. So. It is very fast-paced, very addictive, and, you know, if you crash, you just start up again immediately. One of the interesting things is that every 24 hours, the map changes. And also, it gives you time to learn the map as well, because sometimes, oh, there's the bird dropping multipliers over there. Next time, I'll make sure I'm in that spot. So, I unlocked the Armageddon version of it, which is basically really, really hard, and the sky is red. And then there's the sunrise thing in which there's no sun. You just keep on going until you crash. So it's sort of like a zen mode of it because you're doing it at night. But yeah, nice. I mean, I highly recommend this game as an unwindy racer.
Huh. Yeah, that does sound kind of relaxing.
Yep. And it has a really nice look to it. It's very geometric. So you can have a ton of objects on the screen. It's not going to slow down. So, yeah, I mean, it was free on Xbox Live Marketplace, but normally it's just $9. And it's on PC as well. And I think it's on PS4. I'm not sure. I mean, it's one of those games that's just, you know, multi-platform, cheap game, but it's the unwindy game. It's the one in which you just sit down, play a bit, and then stop.
It is on PlayStation and Xbox.
Like I said, it's a nice little racer. It's like a single player Wipeout.
Looks nice.
Yeah, and like I said, the play is really smooth because it isn't taxing the processor. Anyways, what have you been playing, TJ?
Smash Brothers all the time, all this last week.
Why?
Because it's good.
No, it is. Oh, God. It has not changed in 19 years.
Let people enjoy their games.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I have to draw the line at this. It has not changed in 19 years, and basically you can play just by slapping the controller against your forehead.
No, there's more to it than that.
Sure, whatever.
I love Bowser. Bowser is my go-to, and he's sort of a wrestling character because he has a super dropkick and a body slam, and I love those things. And just like the game is so chock full of just like nostalgia from like the obvious stuff, like, hey, it's the Mario Brothers theme. I've heard that before.
You sound like someone who's a fan of One Direction. Seriously.
Like someone who's a fan of One Direction? What does that have to do
with One Direction?
Anyways,
I mean, it's not even just like the big things, like the hearing the Mario Brothers theme for the nth time. It's the little things, like
it's the little things that have nothing to do with actual gameplay.
They do have everything to do with actual gameplay, no, though, because you have to play the game to see them. That is not true at all.
It is.
That sounds like somebody who hasn't even touched the game in a decade.
You know which game is better than Super Smash Bros.? About a million times better? That duck fighting game. Now that is fun.
I mean, that is fun too, but it's not. But I mean, like, Smash Bros. Ultimate isn't bad.
Duck. What is it? Duck fight? Duck game? I forgot the name of it. I think it's called Duck Game. Yeah, it's called Duck Game. It is clever. All the, you know, it's very fast-paced. All the levels have their own little themes. And just the way people die is fun. You know? It's just hilarious. Super Smash Bros. Has no personality. Its personality is, oh, look, look at all these characters that you know.
It has more than that. Like, it literally is a love letter to all things Nintendo.
Yeah, it's a love letter to... No, but that's fine. But you know what you could do? You could have wallpaper with all the characters and still be a love letter.
I mean, yeah, but it has a lot of interaction to go with it. I mean, it's the one... I don't know how you're not on board with the game where you can take Bayonetta and beat up Ryu and Cloud with it in
match. You know, there's the... You know, Yahtzee even said it. That's the God moves in mysterious ways. And he haven't had an answer for, you know, which game, which you can have the Cloud.
But who cares about seeing other people do it? You can do it yourself.
I don't care. I mean, a game has to have substance. That's why, you know, here's the thing. I get excited over the characters in Injustice 2 because they actually do something. You know? In Mario Brothers, okay, fine. One has a mallet, you know. And you can say all you like watching Solid Snake gut Mario in the ribs and toss him off the thing.
Jeez. Yeah,
whatever.
I don't think one of the better things is
that I love the fact that that kids will have to explain to their parents what Bayonetta is doing in the game.
I mean, but that's the fun of it. It's kind of like a game for everybody.
Even the Capcom fighting game, when you fight Pac-Man, was more entertaining.
I don't know about that.
It's not... It's just...
I mean, it's not your jam. I get it. And that's fair. It's not for everybody. But it is pretty dang good.
What have you ever played, Scott?
Well, I haven't played that game. That's fine. But I haven't played anything.
Hold on one second. Scott, you never answered this. Ted, did you ever complete Dragon Quest XI?
Oh my gosh. That boss is really tough, and apparently there's a way to fight it. Even if you grind to level 99, you still have to do certain tactics to beat this freaking boss. So I have to finish that boss, and then I'll be done with the game, and I can finish.
I hate games in which you have to grind, you know? That's what killed Blue Dragon for me. I love Blue Dragon until, time to grind.
Yeah. I understand, but you don't have to grind in this. This is totally optional. Okay. And there's, like, I guess, a shortcut by fighting these giant metal slime, the king metal slimes. You get, like, 5 levels.
So but, what you're saying is it's sort of like the Dark Souls version in which in order to defeat one character is really, really tough, you have to get this item that's hidden away?
Not so much the item. You get this item automatically. You just don't realize what it does, you know, if you don't, you know... The thing in Dragon's Quest is you can use items in battle besides just your abilities and spells, and these items will have different effects. And there's this one sword you get automatically in the game that lifts dark auras, which is what this final boss puts out, which is very debilitating to your party. So you have to use your sword, that you get by the story to lift the aura, and that makes it much easier to fight the boss.
Okay.
I just haven't finished it, and once I do...
I was thinking might be a Castlevania 2 situation in which you have to find some guy to get some secret item that to get it, it breaks all logic.
No, it's nowhere near that bad. Nowhere near that bad. It's like I said, it's a story plot game item, and once you get it, you can always use it. It's just I think a lot of people overlook that fact that they have it because they overlook the fact that you can use items in battles. There's wands that you can use to cast a fireball spell or resurrection spell or healing spell without using your mana, so it helps you that way.
Hmm. So, did either of you watch the Game Awards?
Yeah, I watched the whole thing from beginning to end.
I was forced to. God, it. You know, here's the thing. The awards sucked. The only reason I had to watch was because there would be new game announcements, and I have to screen cap them and post the games onto Game Watcher so other people can write articles about them. And one of the most infuriating things is Jeff Keighley wrote on Twitter how gamers have been marginalized for too long. You know, what's it called? The video game industry has been marginalized. I'm saying, well, you know what? If you feel marginalized, well, I don't care because you marginalize others. You know? Just talk about to the women, the minorities, and the gays who have to deal with your crap. You know, gamer crap. And I got shit for it. But then again, women gamers came to my defense. It's sort of like, you know, how do you know how a woman gamer feels? Are you a woman? You know, it's...
Sure, but at the same time, like... I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. That does exist, and it exists in a rampant way that's pretty horrible. But at the same time, I mean, you did have a bright moment of the night where
Sonic Fox won three esports things: he's black and he's a furry.
Yeah, and he won esports player of the year. The dude is legitimate. Like. People want to be like, that dude is pompous and cocky, and he has every right to be because he plays 5 different fighting games and he's the best one in the world at all of them.
But here's the other thing is that this reminds me of what I was talking about marginalizing. A lot of the, let's call them the GGs were complaining how he ruined the entire awards for them. Ruined the entire awards for me is Ninja got an award. What the fuck?
I mean, like, yeah, of course they complain that Sonic Fox ruined the entire awards because they hate having a mirror held up to them and saying, fuck you.
I'm better than you, too. I'll play in my costume and beat you.
Mm-hmm. And he has. And that's kind of like, if you were mad about that, like, if you're mad because he went up there, was super happy, expressed himself, told a story about how he gave, like, he wasn't, this was a real story where he was in a match with one of his longtime rivals in Injustice 2, and the dude's dad is going through stage 4 cancer, and he made a decision that regardless of whether he won or lost, he was going to give a portion of his prize money to his rival's dad for his cancer treatments. And that's just the kind, that's who Sonic Fox is. He's the best player in the world. He's cocky, but he's also the most fucking real guy out there.
Yeah,
but, and he doesn't make time for assholes. So when they come at him like that, he's like, I'm gonna fucking dunk on you.
But here's the thing: the beginning of the show just made me want to punch the screen because Jeff Keighley came up and said, "Look at how many games we've been selling." Really, that's your big brag? Oh, we advertise well. Come buy our ad space so that you can do well. Award ceremony.
I mean, at the end of the day, he's got to pump it up.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you don't have to nominate Detroit for anything. God. But anyway, there was some interesting stuff, a lot of interesting stuff.
Yes, there was. There was quite a few good announcements in that show.
Talking about some of them, especially Epic. But the other thing that reminds me is that, you know, Sekiro is still a thing, and it just makes me laugh. It's like, yeah, Neo, you think you're a thing? Well, guess what? Activision hired From Software to Dark Souls you away.
Hey, Jonah, how do you spell that guy's name? Because I tried to Google it, and I got everybody but that guy.
Sonic. Which one?
James Keighley, you said?
Oh, Jeff. It's
Jeff
Keighley,
yeah. G-E-O-F-F-K-E-I-G-H-L-E-Y.
Oh, okay, there we go.
He used to actually...
Oh, okay.
He's the host. He used to be with either CGW or IGN, or maybe 1UP.
He's kind of been all over the place.
Yeah, I mean...
Oh, he's not a game maker? He's just a journalist?
Yeah,
Why did he say he sold games?
Well, I mean, he's you know, I'm not going to say he sold out because you know, I would sell out in a minute to get paid what he's paid.
But
he's just really gone Hollywood in a big way.
All Jeff Keighley really has to do is put on the Game Awards each year and then disappear for a long, long time until the next time for the Game Awards, which is kind of
not entirely true. I mean, he does, but here's the thing. He's everything Will Wheaton wishes he was. Will Wheaton wants to be Jeff Keighley and just can't. Yeah, Will, how's Woopfest going?
Will's been on Star Trek. You can't take that away from him.
Yeah, so what?
He's on Star Trek.
Yeah, and he hated his character on Star Trek. Everybody hated his character, including himself.
I mean, that's true.
If I was in L.A. 10 years earlier, I could have been on Star Trek.
Yes, but I know who Will Wheaton was. I had to Google this Jeff Knightley guy.
Jeff Keighley.
Keighley, whatever. Dude, I forgot, can't even get his stupid name right.
No relation to Kira. But he was on I remember where he was from now. He was on Game Trailers, and he was a big part of G4 back in the day.
Yeah, but he was also with either 1UP or IGN or some magazine.
He did
a shit ton of podcasts, too.
Game Trailers.
And he was on a podcast, too. He was on a big podcast. And I think it was 1UP's podcast, because when 1UP went down, a lot of people, you know, some of them formed Rebel FM, which is still going on, which is the one podcast I still listen to on a regular basis besides this one.
Mm-hmm.
And my podcast hosts don't even listen to this podcast.
Why you gotta call me out like that?
I mean, I don't like listening to my voice. So
I know, it's just that, you know, what's it called? It's more like, I don't have to listen to your podcast. I lived it.
Well, that's true.
I don't like the sound of my voice either, but I listen just to make sure that, you know, it came out right.
Well, yeah, you have to edit it.
No, I mean, edit it. I mean, after it's published and it's, you know, out in the wild, I usually listen to it just to make sure nothing wrong happened to it.
Ah.
And also, I like listening back to our arguments about it. You know, I've been editing less and less. Our podcast is going to be edited, but, you know, if we can do this perfectly, so far it's been perfect. I won't have to edit. That's what I want to be able to just, okay, mono, add the theme, boom, it's out in the wild. But yeah, let me ask you a question. How are you feeling about Sekiro, DJ?
I'm trying to remember what that is.
That's the From Software's game for Activision. It's the Japanese themed, ninja themed Dark Souls game.
For some reason, I didn't make that connection. I kept thinking Sekiro.
Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. Come on, man.
I
should have added the colon. You know, it's Sekiro, but it's also Shadows Die Twice.
For some reason, I kept thinking like some sort of security agency.
Sekiro, for your data needs.
I'm still interested. I'm still interested because I 2019 is going to be the year of the samurai. Between Neo 2, between Sekiro, who is it? The dudes who did Infamous also have a game going. Ghost of Tsushima. It's going to... Oh, and Onimisha is coming back.
And all this and no Ninja Gaiden. Because the guys at Ninja are doing something else.
What? Well, ninjas aren't samurais, Jonah.
I don't care. It's Japanese culture, damn it.
But no, I'm still interested in Sekiro. Anything that, like... I am interested to see this like showdown between
Neo and
Sekiro.
Well, here's the thing, you know, at least you know From Software, all their Dark Souls type games, you know, Bloodborne and et cetera, have been Western. Actually, you know, they've been Western fantasy. Now mm-hmm. they're going into Japanese fantasy, and it's gonna be interesting to see what they do with it.
Absolutely, they're gonna take what they know. Probably take some things they saw from Neo and blend them into a pretty good, from what I understand, actually a narrative-based story with action gameplay, which From Software is terrible at narrative. So I'm interested to see them try to actually tell a story for once instead of just trying to like shove everything into the background and make you figure it out like a puzzle that you don't have all the pieces to.
Well, you know what this is an unofficial sequel to, right?
What is it?
Tenchu. Because Software worked on Tenchu as well.
I didn't even make that connection. Loved Tenchu.
I mean, this is basically their updated version of Tenchu, except using Dark Souls stuff.
That's pretty rad. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, well, From Software was partially developed Tenchu, but they were a part of it. So they're going to be taking what they learned from Tenchu as well, or at least the story and the feel of the game. So, yeah, I mean, we didn't, you know, I'll do, for your sake, next week we'll do a gaming flashback of Tenchu.
For sure. I actually, we got to do the Wrath of Heaven because that's the best one.
Or maybe I'll do the, what was the name of the game that was the predecessor to Nier? Drakengard.
Yeah.
So anyways, see, we have some heavy stuff in here, and we'll do the first news item, and that is developers do not believe in Steam is worth it anymore. This comes from Game Watcher. Steam is in trouble. It's being beset on all sides by competitors, and now with Epic Games Store offering competitive deal for developers, it's up to Valve to show that Steam is still worth it. Unfortunately, a new survey of game developers have shown that the developers do not believe Steam is worth the 30% they pay. Now, to back up to something, I think we discussed it. Yeah, I don't know if we discussed it last week, but Epic released after they made their debut in the Game Awards, they released this thing showing that they could still make money by only taking 18% from the games, you know, taking an 18% cut. So the annual survey has been conducted for the past few years, and the impressions Valve and Steam amongst developers has dropped significantly. Developers are losing confidence in Steam. They do not believe the money they pay to the store is justified, and this will play into Epic's hands. The full survey can be read saying Operation Tell Valve All the Things 3.0. It's important to realize that the most recent survey for 2018 was rushed, and it wasn't allowed the time, nor had developer respondents as previous years, because surveyor Lars Doucette was due for a meeting with Valve and wanted to give him this information. So it's not perfect, binding, or truly scientific. However, it does bring a strong indication that many game developers are unhappy with Valve and the way Steam is run. Answers to statements about Valve, such as answers my questions and meets my needs, or has interests positively aligned with mine, has dropped significantly into negative. But it's the statement that Valve is earning 30% cut that they take from the game sales that's the most alarming. The view of Western developers, in particular, towards Steam in this category has dropped significantly. In the U.S., for example, 82% of developers voted that Steam was not earning their pay cut due to various reasons. This includes their games getting screwed by, quote-unquote, the algorithm, which means Steam's bizarre algorithm that chooses what games to promote and what not to promote. With the Steam's game store now up and running, and incidentally, most developers surveyed they would consider putting their games on Epic's store, an increasing number of major games and publishers are leaving Steam for other digital platforms. Valve is under pressure to make Steam worth it for developers again and for consumers. Yeah, you know, let's talk about Hunt Down the Freeman as one of the main reasons why Valve is really bad right now. Here is a truly awful game, yet is using Valve's IP, selling on Valve's store. And,
yeah,
you know, that cannot happen. Imagine if Nintendo, of course, this would never happen with Nintendo because they're so litigious, but anyways, suppose someone made a really bad version of Smash Brothers with Mario and Superman and Peppy and whatever that racist frog is, you know, and Nintendo said, okay, we can sell it on our eStore.
Yeah, so this is what you get for just throwing money at automation over actually having people that work your site.
Well,
and
here's the other thing they threw their money at. You know what they were doing for the past 10 years, right? They were trying to make Linux the gaming platform for games. Their stupid Steam OS, their stupid hardware and all that stuff. They were concentrating on that so much and trying to feed Microsoft and Windows. Apple didn't do it, guys. Did you think you were going to be able to? And Apple has actual hardware that people use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wasted all their energy on that and just said, okay, we're just going to let whatever go on the Steam store. Just junk it up.
But, like, I'm going to jump ahead to, like, this last week where we saw our first glimpse of an indie game developer choosing to go the way of Epic, which was Supergiant Games putting their newest title. The people who made Bastion and Transistor, by the way, they went with their new game, and surprisingly enough, they're releasing it in early access on Epic's new platform. And go ahead.
Every it looks like they're giving away two games every week. I signed up to, you know, look, get on the storefront of Epic, and they're giving away.
I'm kidding. So imagine me saying that like it was in The Force Awakens. Traitor!
Anyways, they're giving away Nautica or Subnautica and Super Meat Boy. And I think that's really tempting, because I can't count on one hand how many times Steam has given away a game, whereas GOG's Galaxy and apparently Epic give away games. So that might help bring people over to it.
Well, it's Super Meat Boy Forever, but they just announced Maneater for it. Remember that Killer Shark game?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the surprise things was Journey is coming to PC, and it's going to be on the Indie Store. I mean, who was seeing that?
And the difference between Steam and pretty much every other one doing this right now has always been curation. GOG curates. Epic is probably going to curate. Nintendo curates. Everybody curates. And in fact, you avoid these situations that are entirely like isolated to Steam, the review bombs, the stupid thousands and thousands of shovelware games of people just trying to make a quick shoddy buck off of it. And you get like, and of course indie developers have been looking for something else. So of course when Supergiant jumped over to Epic, other people are going to do the same.
Well,
other people are going
everybody everybody, Annapurna, put all their games on the Epic Games Store, including Ashen, which, by the way, was supposed to be an Xbox Play Anywhere game. Mm-hmm. It's still on the Xbox Game Pass, so Xbox game, but it was going to be one of those games which, if you bought it for Windows, you got it for Xbox and vice versa. So, yeah, and Microsoft probably saw this coming. You know, they didn't really do anything about it. The other thing is that Obsidian's new game is going to be on the Epic Games thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So like, you get what you reap what you sow, Steam. Like, if you're going to be that hands off, if you're going to be that I mean, at this point, Valve is going to have to start making games again to make their money.
Well, here's the thing. There is no such thing as too big to fail, right? Microsoft knows this. Microsoft's had their issues before, right? But they know how they know how to quickly adjust and correct. I mean, they're going to be getting rid of Edge, and they're going to be going with a Chrome-based browser, which would have been unheard of a couple of years ago. You know, I mean, they were married to Explorer, and you know, they heard people complaining about the Xbox One, so they took away that, you know, online only thing. I mean, they're going to be one news item that we don't have are all the rumors about having a diskless Xbox One. You know, which I think is a good idea. You know, having that option. You know, you take away $100 from the price, and people are doing digital anyway. So I think it's a good idea. You know, you have this option. If you want something really inexpensive, you have a good internet. If you have an internet connection, you can get this, in which you can just buy your games digitally, you know, not worrying about discs. But yeah, I mean, Hades looks hot.
Yes, it looks very cool. It's a nice, like, I guess it looks like it's an isometric fighting game.
It's Bastion, except as a roguelike.
Yeah.
Yeah. And God, they put the soundtrack on YouTube in a playlist recently, and it's so good. So good.
You know what game that was recently announced as an Epic Games thing? Darksiders 3.
That's an interesting
one. Yeah, I saw that. That looks cool, too.
Yeah, I mean, but the big thing is Obsidian's new game is going to be on it as well, which is interesting.
Can we talk about the Obsidian game?
Oh yeah, sure. Let's talk about the Obsidian game. So, just for people to know, this is not going to be a Microsoft game. And Microsoft actually saw this game, you know, when they were acquiring Obsidian, knowing that they were not going to have Obsidian. And I think their thinking was, you know what, whatever, if this game does well, it's a big fat advertisement for Obsidian's next game.
That's true.
You know?
If this game looks like it'll be good competition for Bethesda's Starfield, because this looks
Starfield
like...
Starfield is dead. It's not going to come out. No, what it's going to be a good competition against is Borderlands.
Yeah. I mean, like, it looks... I don't... Without knowing what genre it is yet...
It's an RPG. It's a first-person RPG.
I like the idea of Fallout New Vegas, but in space. I can dig it. I can
really dig
it.
Fallout meets Borderlands.
I love the writers at Obsidian. They're so good. And they come up with systems that are just fun to use. They're good at that. And so I'm so excited to see a new IP out of them.
You know, Shadow Complex is now on the Epic Games Store page now.
Also, like, no offense to Pillars of Eternity and Tyranny, but God, I'm so happy to see Obsidian do something that's not a isometric game for the first time in a long time.
Well, yeah, that one was backed by, I believe, 2K, or one of their subsidiaries.
Mm-hmm. Nothing against those games. They're fun in their own right. I'm just there was a period of time where like we were getting a lot of isometric games in one window, and it must have been hog heaven for Scott, but for me it just kind of it burns, like seeing too much of one thing burns me out for a little bit.
Well,
on
here's
it.
The thing about it though, the reason why they're all isometric is that they're using the same engine over and over and over again. It's less expensive. You know, they didn't have the budget to move on to something different, so they had to stay with that engine.
Oh, sure, but I'm talking about, like, it wasn't just Obsidian. It was Obsidian doing Pillars of Eternity, but then also, like, what was that other one? I rave it about it all the time because it's got the D&D.
The Tyranny tool. And Baldur's Gate, maybe, or no.
No, Divinity. Divinity originally Sin 2.
No, but that's Larian. What are you talking about?
No, that's what I'm saying, though, that like it seemed like there was a window of time where like everybody was putting out an isometric RPG for a little bit.
Right, but in Larian's case, it's...
Well, some of them
do.
Still haven't come out yet. Like Black Geysers and Realm Beyond hasn't come out yet. So they're still coming.
Sure, I know. But like for a moment there it was like it was Pillars of Eternity, then it was Tyranny, then it was Divinity, then it was the new Planescape game.
Yeah.
And like, man, it felt like it was back to back to back for a bit there.
Getting a little I can understand some people getting exhausted with it, need a little break from it.
And that's the thing, is that I know Obsidian is capable of doing all sorts of cool and crazy things, so I'm happy to see them step away from that genre and try something different.
Alpha Protocol is one of my favorite games of all time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it'll be interesting to see what they do for Microsoft, because, you know, if they're going to do something like what they've been doing, or if they're going to do something completely different. Microsoft has already said, though, you know, we're not expecting AAA, we're expecting AA, but here's the thing. The game they're making, you know, it looks a lot like a AAA game, and Microsoft may think, you know what, we might want something big from them if they're going to do this. I mean, definitely In Exile is going to be a small game. I mean, whatever In Exile is going to do, it's going to be something, you know, something like Wasteland 3. You know, it's not going to be, that's the other isometric RPGs that were out, the Wasteland games. You know, whatever In Exile is going to do, it's going to be nice and modest, you know, but Obsidian is capable of doing some really big things. Fallout New Vegas, you know, for one. By the way, I'm actually looking forward to World War Z. You know, I'm hoping it's the Left 4 Dead 3 that we haven't gotten yet.
It does look interesting.
Well, they're going with the movie concept in which the zombies are like water, you know, like a flow of water. So I'm wondering if it's going to be sort of like... you know, Capcom's game, Dead Rising, you know, except more zombies, except they're faster and more aggressive and you have guns.
Yeah, and you have large guns. Like, some of the weaponry in that game was looking pretty intense.
I'm wondering if Journey's going to be coming to the Xbox One, since on Epic, you know, it's sort of like No Man's Sky situation in which, you know, a year, maybe next year at this time, you'll see Journey for the Xbox One. Anyways, by the way, a little PDA for people out there. You can get the Hello Neighbor Hide and Seek alpha demo from Tiny Games. And by the way, Hello Neighbor Hide and Seek is a prequel, which shows, spoiler, how the guy kidnapped his own children and put them in the basement. So, yeah. Hello Neighbor, you know, that was disappointing that it apparently reviewed low and it didn't quite do what people thought, partly because it was buggy. I mean, it's a great concept, a stealth game, which is basically a daytime horror sort of thing.
It's a strange, strange game, and like in some very unique and interesting ways.
But it's like Lynchian, you know. I like to see a game in which not everything has to be, you know, butt monsters, and instead it's just a normal guy, a dad guy with a dad belly, you know, who has a sleepy-eyed look to him, which just makes him scarier. It's like, oh yeah, this guy. Let me just capture him.
Yep.
Wearing my sweater vest.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what they do with the new one, but I'm curious. What do you do after the first Hello Neighbor? How do you improve upon that?
Make yourself a little kid. A little kid who's trying to hide.
I guess, yeah. That would be even creepier, too, if you were, like, actually one of the little kids that was trying to escape that guy.
What I mean, but that's just it. I think, I haven't played the demo yet, but I think you're one of the little kids, and you're trying to hide from him. So, I mean, that is creepy, though.
Because there is the disconnects about Hello Neighbor is that, like, you get caught, he just kind of dumps you out in the street, and it doesn't really matter.
Well, I think he kills you, and then you just reload.
Yeah.
But then again, what do you expect to do for it to, you know, wipe itself off your disc? That's it. You got one life, and that's it.
That would be an awesome concept for a game as well, but no one is brave enough to do that.
Punch you in the face.
There's plenty of people who do die. There's plenty of games that are like that.
Yeah, the game of life. You know, you only have one life, and after it's done, you know, there's no reset.
Well, I remember there was some old Ultima game, I think, that did that, and there was
You're thinking of permadeath, in which your save was... No, that was a lot of things. That was a lot of games that did that.
Okay.
But it didn't wipe your game off your hard drive.
Oh, okay.
We're not talking about permadeath, you know.
Okay.
I mean, hell, you can play Iron Man mode on any of the XCOMs.
Yeah.
But anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, teacher.
Canada announced for Civilization VI Gathering Storm.
You know, just for a pause, I wish we had Dan here right now.
To talk about Canada?
Yeah, he's from Canada, and he's a boot Canada. He's all about Canada.
He would be able to speak to how true to form these perks and units are. Canada's leader is Prime Minister Wilfrid Laurier. I'm going to try that again.
Laurier.
Canada's leader is Prime Minister Wilfrid Laurier, remembered for his strong advocacy for uniting French and English-speaking citizens under one national banner. His unique ability, the Last Best West, allows players to build farms on tundra terrain and later on tundra hills. In addition, the cost of purchasing snow and tundra tiles is halved. The Four Faces of Peace ability prevents Canada from declaring surprise wars, but they cannot have surprise wars declared on them either. It also grants bonus diplomatic favor based on per-turn tourism, and Canada receives extra diplomatic favor from successfully completing emergencies or scored competitions. The special district for Canada is the ice hockey rink, because of course it is. Which grants additional appeal and amenity and bonus culture for each adjacent snow hills, tundra, and tundra hills tile. Once the flight technology is unlocked, it grants tourism from culture. After unlocking the professional sports civic, awards additional production and food, and if built adjacent to a stadium building, grants even more culture. only one ice hockey rink is allowed within the within a city's borders. The unique unit is the Mountie, a modern-era unit that has the ability to create a national park. Mounties receive combat bonuses when fighting near a national park, and an additional combat bonus if the national park is owned by Canada. They are also excellent at defense.
You know, the one thing that I keep on thinking is being able to build farms on tundra and tundra hills. Because here's the thing, if you're ever in a game and you get stuck on near the north or south poles, it's like, oh god, I gotta restart. Now I'm sort of like, yeah.
Well, it helps turn bad land into probably okay land, at least, you know, usable, so it's not so bad. You don't feel so land screwed. So that's good. I also like that they have geared this Civ to be more peaceful and working towards a diplomatic victory. And you can't, again, you can't, oh, that's right. Dan would be upset because you can't bully city-states. And
yeah, you can't attack city-states at all. They won't allow you, yeah.
Yeah, so you can't do that, and that was definitely one of his favorite things to do. So my friends kind of joked that this was the anti-Dan Canada Civ.
But yeah, but for me, I'm a turtler, you know, and usually I turn off culture victory because that's usually my default victory, and I don't want to keep getting a culture victory.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it encourages players to really get into politics, and every time there's an emergency, just jump right in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really take advantage of the favors that you incur.
How strange that the ice hockey rink isn't a upgrade for like a coliseum instead of just like a its own special district.
Oh, given, I think the coliseum is a world wonder now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Wasn't there some sort of thing like the coliseum though?
Yeah, there was.
There's an entertainment hub.
They have a stadium building, but
okay,
it's separate from the ice rink.
Given the vapid love in the hockey community for hockey fights, I don't understand why this isn't an upgrade to that.
Well, I understand. I do.
I remember last week I was talking about how there weren't enough North American Civs, you know, and I, like an idiot, I completely forgot. Oh, yeah, right. Canada.
Yeah, Canada.
Mm-hmm. Which makes me wonder if they're going to announce the Mexican Civ.
Yeah, I feel like
Railway Empires has a Mexico DLC.
I mean, at this point, they have a cup. They just have one Native American Civ and Civ 6, right?
You know, I wonder if they're going to make sort of Mayan the sort of the Mexico Civ. I mean, it is Mesoamerican, and it's closer than the Incans were.
Well, you're probably going to get – don't we already have Aztecs?
Yeah, we have Aztecs. Sure. But Aztecs were way south in South America. The Mayans were closer to where Mexico is. Not very close, but close enough.
I thought Aztecs were in Mexico.
Yeah. I mean,
Aztecs is basically what Mexico became. Or what
I don't know. The Mayans Mexico. Always seemed a little more Mexican than the Aztecs were. Like I said, it's going to be very interesting to see what the Mayans' special abilities are going to be. I mean, it's kind of obvious what their special building is going to be, and it's going to be obvious what their special unit is. But their special abilities, I mean, what is it going to be? Being able to starve faster?
Sid Meier, you're a coward. The special ability for Canada should have been legal weed.
You can assume it.
They just legalized weed in Canada, Scott.
That's cool. Yeah,
I don't care. I don't put anything in my lungs. And here's the thing. For all you weed smokers, please, please, please learn that you really have to get incense, okay? Incense is your friend. Get some patchouli oil. Get some incense.
They know, Jonah.
They don't know. Because here's the thing, care. You know, have to understand that walking around stinking of weed is sort of like a guy walking around stinking of booze.
They can't smell. They can't smell it, Jonah. That's the whole thing with smokers. They can't smell how bad they smell. They don't know.
You know, here's a scientific fact. You really can't smell your own stink.
Yeah.
Because you're conditioned not to, you know. But you know that you stink. So that's why you take a shower.
I'm just sitting here shaking my head at all of this.
It's true.
We've really totally got away from video game.
You want to think of beer walking around? Actually, if you stunk of beer, then that would identify you as a Canadian.
I just remember.
Hey, wait a minute. How come there's no beer-related what's it called stuff for the Canadian Civ either?
Yeah, they love that stuff too.
They should have the strange brew.
So does Germany and Russia.
There's no maple syrup perk or anything.
No, but the U.S. also has that.
There might be a maple syrup resource.
No, I mean, they should have the Great White North, what's it called, ability, in which they consume beer.
I mean, Strange Brew was a wonderful movie.
It was a weird movie. I mean, it was I would have never known about it except for it is the strangest version of Hamlet you'll ever see.
It's my favorite version of Rick Moranis.
But I'm just saying, you realize the entire movie is a riff on Hamlet? I mean, they kind of make it obvious with Elsinore Brewery, but still.
Yeah, I can see that. I didn't really grasp it at the time I was watching it because I was too busy laughing at the dog rolling up the roof.
Yeah, and also when his cape flies off, he just looks back. There's little things in that. Or when Rick Moranis is inflated to gigantic size because he drank all the beer and he really has to pee.
So out of all this is what, the third Civ that we've seen?
The third announced? Yeah, the third Civ we've seen so far.
What do you guys think of them so far? Like, are they changing it up enough to warrant their existences?
Well, here's the thing. One, a lot of these Civs are made, and they're also changing a lot of the previous Civs to take advantage of the Gathering Storm. This one is not doing that. This one is actually creating something that is filling a hole. I mean, if you play Civ 6... Well, there's no use for the Arctic regions. This gives you a reason to be in Arctic regions.
It also is
a defensive, turtling
victory, which is So that is part of the Gathering Storm.
But as a whole, all the Civs are basically taking chances. You know, I mean, look at the Maiori. That's the one Civ that doesn't start on land. It starts in the middle of the water, and you have to find them a place to land. You know, normally
so they are changing up the Civs. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with the Mayans and whatever else they bring in.
Yeah, because technically, when you forget your first Civ, it always puts you in a good place for a city. You know, you can just press B immediately. With the Maiori, that's not true because you can't press B. You have to find a place of your own. You know, so they're saying, what if? You know, you didn't have land and you had to find a place to land. This one is, well, what if we make the worst land your friend? You know, the worst land in the game you want now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Russians did it to a little bit, but really, who cares about the Aurora, Faith? You know, getting bonus for Auroras, you know, for Tundra. You know, you get a religion bonus if you have your temples near Tundra. That's the Aurora Faith.
There's also a camp food upgrade for
Who cares about camps? You know, and hunting deer. You know, at least now
get food.
But here's the thing: a lot of the good resources are found in Arctic regions. We have oil, we have various types of you know, precious gems. You know, I think you also have quarries in the Arctic regions too. I'm not sure. I think you do. So there's good stuff there, but it's always a sacrifice to have to go there. Now you say, well, this place is probably going to have oil. It's probably going to have plutonium or uranium. Oh, was it uranium or plutonium in the game?
Uranium.
Uranium, yeah. So it's uranium, you know. So there's some really good resources that are in the Arctic, but it's sort of like having to say, well, do I really want an outpost just to have iron? Now you can say, yeah, sure. Because now it'll grow because I can build farms there. I can have actual food output and make it grow.
It's all fun and games until you start Canada and get put in the desert.
You have Canada going to war with the United States. Then you can pop in the South Park bigger, longer, and uncut track. So you have Blame Canada playing over and over and over again. You know, I'm pretty sure that's going to be a mod. They're going to replace whatever music that they're going to have for Canada and just replace it with an instrumental version of Blame Canada.
Pretty sure in that scene where America and Canada go to war, the Canadians just straight up running with chainsaws. So don't mess with Canada.
Yeah, they should have a chainsaw unit. Forget the Mountie. you know that you're gonna have there's probably gonna be a mod that every time you move, every time you finish moving the Mountie, it's gonna say no. Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, hold on. All right, Studio Wildcards Atlas is delayed by a week. This is from Dual Shockers. Atlas, the open-world survival pirate-themed MMO from Studio Wildcard, has been delayed by 6 days from its early access launch on PC. The game will now launch on Wednesday, December 19th, to Steam Early Access. Studio Wildcard is known for their dinosaur survival game Ark Survival Evolved. Atlas made its trailer debut last week during the Game Awards. The new MMO will apparently host 40,000 players simultaneously as they explore the pirate world made by Studio Wildcard. Players will be able to build their own ships and use them to take over fortresses, attack merchant ships, and hunt for treasure. In the trailer shown the Game Awards, there are numerous diverse shots, dragons, and other pirate-themed goodness. You can check the trailer out below if you missed it last week. The Xbox One version of Atlas is supposed to launch sometime early next year in game preview. This console first release is similar to when Ark Survival Evolved launched a game preview on Xbox One. Atlas will launch $30 on Steam, and Xbox One Early Access will release into Xbox game preview sometime 2019.
Yeah, this game, and here's the thing, it's coming out on Xbox Early Access. Now, what other pirate MMO do we know of that's on that? Oh, right, Sea of Thieves. So, yeah, it's basically the excuse here. It's sort of like, now, it's sort of like they're, you know, one of the complaints about Sea of Thieves is kind of empty. Not Atlas. It's going to have, you know, siege weapons. It's going to have ports. It's going to have everything. And there's a game that it's based on. That's going to make it very interesting. And the game that it's based on is not Ark Survival Evolved. It's basically using the same model as EVE Online. Think of EVE Online, except without space pirates. You now have actual pirates.
Man, whatever happened to Skull and Crossbones?
It died. It died a sad death.
I don't know. Like, I mean, I feel like Ubisoft isn't going to let that one go. I just haven't heard anything about it in a long time.
But yeah, I mean, this is going to have 40,000 square miles to explore. Hostile
attack chopper. You know, and like, I mean, Ark knows their way around an open world sandbox.
Yeah, that's the problem with Ark, though. I mean, that's the problem with Studio Wildcard. Ark Survival Evolved basically sucks. And it's ambitious. And that's the thing about Atlas. If you want to say anything about it, I mean, you have friggin' dragons in this game. You can ride dragons in this game. You don't want to, you don't have to be a pirate. You can be one of the dragon riders of Pern. It's going to be really ambitious. And by the way, it's being developed by Grapeshot Games. It's a spinoff from Studio Wildcard. So we don't know. It's not going to be done by those pricks, Stieglitz and Rapsik, you know. And if you want to know why they're pricks, just Google search them and how they ripped off other people. But like I said, I don't know. Microsoft is willingly putting this on Steam on their early access, on their Game Pass. This is them throwing down the gauntlet at Rare and saying, look what these guys are doing. Yeah, you're doing an arena mode, fine. But look what they're doing. You want to keep your jobs.
Yeah, like, I'm not sure that I care about an Ark game before the mods come out. But,
these are pirates, damn it. Pirates and dragons. All that's missing is ninjas and zombies. Well, I'm willing to guarantee there's going to be zombies in this game. So all we're lacking are the ninjas.
But I can already mod Pirates and Dragons into Ark.
Yeah, but we're talking about an open world pirate game. You know what game this is, you know, which people seem to have forgotten, that steampunk Zeppelin game? I forgot the name of it. But, you know, it's a multiplayer game in which everybody's in a steam Zeppelin and they're fighting. I mean, I would love to see a fully realized world with that. You know? I mean, it is a world, but it isn't a complicated world. This one is promising to be a persistent MMO world that's run by, hey, Fallout 76. This is how you do a persistent MMO world. You make it interesting. By the way, we should talk about how Fallout 76 is dragging Bethesda with them. It's becoming a disaster of epic proportions. Remember, Scott, when I said earlier that Starfield looked... Yeah, it's not coming out because of Fallout 76.
Partly is that confirmed that, yet?
Partly because the engine...
Yeah, is that confirmed? I agree with TJ. Is that confirmed?
It's not confirmed. It's your opinion,
then.
They're letting it die in the vine.
It doesn't look like that's... I don't know. It's just...
There's been nothing about Starfield since the E3. Nothing.
Well, and it's not like Cyberpunk 2077. This game would take a couple of years to develop.
I mean, we've had those rumors coming out from developers, you know, or people claiming to be developers, how much of a fucking disaster it is, and I can believe it. Can you imagine trying to use the Oblivion engine, trying to do spaceship combat with that? You can fucking barely ride a horse.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know what I expect out of it. Like, it was way too early for me to care about anything going on with it, too, because, like, as far as we know, we've seen a look at stars and a logo, and that's about it. Yeah. That's all anyone knows about Starfield. It's kind of like an enigma right now, and I figure, like, I don't know. I won't care until like they'll either say it's canceled or they'll do something that has substance.
Right now, yeah. Bethesda's main focus is making Fallout 76 good again, or make it a good. You know, they already announced that they're going to do server events. You know, but what they really have to do is just make it interesting. You know, the idea of not having any people around when you get out—that was a bad idea. You know, you need things to interact with. You know, even if it's just ghouls, if you just want to have ghouls that are talking because, you know, everybody else died and they're just survivors. As a matter of fact, that actually creates a plot hole. Why aren't ghouls in the game? Aren't ghouls the ones who survived the nuclear attacks?
Wait, did you say ghouls aren't in Fallout 76?
Yeah, that's ghouls not right.
I think they all turned into burned and they just were all killed. I don't know.
No, the ghouls survived. That's the entire point. They are irradiated. They survived, and the people came out of the vaults afterwards. You know, I don't know. Fallout 76 is just one big mess, and you know why Fallout 76 exists? Because Bethesda saw Rust and it saw all these other survival games and said, you know, we want a piece of that action.
Where'd you see that there weren't ghouls in Fallout 76? There's definitely ghouls in Fallout 76.
I haven't seen any.
Yeah, there's all sorts of different ones.
Yeah, but they don't talk to you. No, I'm talking about ghouls who talk, not irradiated ghouls that attack you.
You become the ghouls. The players have to be the ghouls.
No
NPCs, Jonah. None. No NPCs ever.
Yeah, that's going to be... Yeah, that's really working out well.
I'm just saying.
You know, who are you going to behave badly against? You know, it's sort of like... You don't have anybody judging you except other players, and that's no fun. You want the game to judge you.
Well, they're eventually going to do that faction-based warfare thing that you were talking about.
Yeah, but
I mean,
people would care first.
I mean, people will care. Not as many people as PlanetSide when it first came out, but people that are still in there will care.
Okay, you know what? We're going to go into the next item. You can take this, TJ, since this is your thing.
My thing. And actually, I love it. Rainbow Six Siege chat filter and toxicity update from Game Watcher. Ubisoft is evolving the chat toxicity system in its multiplayer FPS Rainbow Six Siege by adding a chat filter, it announced in a post blog. Previously, it had an automatic ban feature that targeted inappropriate language. Although Ubisoft says it was effective at curtailing bad behavior, it also had its intrusive side for players who weren't using any inappropriate language. The goal of the chat filter is to encourage players to be vigilant with the language they are using without immediately disrupting other players. While we valued the performance against toxicity that the auto-ban system brought, we also wanted to provide a more transparent feedback system for our players. The blog post reads, whenever players use inappropriate language starting on December 10th, they will receive the following message. The following message was not sent and will be reviewed for inappropriate content. With a note of the word used. All of this will go in tandem with the manual toxicity reviews for temporary and permanent bans that Ubisoft has been enforcing for the past few years. I clap my hands every time I read about this because Ubisoft Montpellier is really going full ham.
Yeah, and I mean the previous method even seemed to me a little bit heavy-handed. You know, I mean, there is room for, you know, for mistake. I mean, this is better. Just blank out the word and say, we're looking at you now.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you gotta work out technology like that, because the fact of the matter is we're to the point where, like, technology like that matters.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, but it's true. And kudos. Kudos to Ubisoft for, like, exploring those possibilities, because really, like, you see people –
We see people – the one news item I didn't use was that Bethesda ban of that Fallout 76 player.
Yeah, like, I don't see anyone go as hard at toxicity as Ubisoft does right now, or at least the Rainbow Six Siege team. And it's impressive to see somebody take such a – stance to being like, if you're going to be an asshole, you're not going to play in our game. It's as simple as that.
There needs to be consequences for these people, otherwise they'll never learn.
Mm-hmm. And of course you got the people that are like, yeah, but what, it's freedom of speech, it's freedom of language. And it's like, no, you're going into an establishment. The establishment is Rainbow Six Siege. If you think you're going to say things like that in their establishment and feel free to say them, well, then I mean,
you're kicked out. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
If you're not able to say it in polite society, what makes you think you're going to be able to do it here? You know, here's the thing. I want you to go to Macy's and start using the same language you do there, and then try and claim freedom of speech as the bouncers kick you out.
Yeah.
No one's arresting you. They're just not letting you use their shit.
And people are stupid enough to do that. It has happened. Yeah. But again, the courts are never on their side when they take that one into the courtroom. Because, quite frankly, it's a business. Games are a business just as much as anything else. If you think you're going to walk in there and pretend you have the lay of the land, some places will let you. Rainbow Six Siege sure as fuck won't, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to go back to Fallout 76 here, because let's talk about that incident, because it is related to this. So these guys were playing. This kid came in and asked for a disease cure, and they were chatting, and one of the guys commented, you know, he looked cute in his characters, and he said, I don't fuck with it, homo shit, and he left. 10 minutes later, he returned with friends and harassed them. And not only was he using homophobic slurs, but he had the balls to actually upload his video onto YouTube, thinking it would be all right. The video was called Cleansing of the Queers. And that is the least offensive thing that he did. That's the least offensive. You know, but here's the thing, and this is how it's related. One of the players that he was harassing, you know, they moved servers, of course. They wanted to report this guy to Bethesda, but guess what? There's no in-game player report function in Fallout 76. Remember when I was talking before, months ago, how I was skeptical of how they were going to deal with griefing? This is the basic stuff. Having a report function in your game, not even a record video audio function in which you could actually video them doing it, you know. No, just have a simple report function. Bethesda was lucky that this guy reported himself by posting the video on YouTube. He basically reported himself. And my favorite part is this player said, well, I'm not homophobic.
No one cares if you like that or not. You acted like it.
You're an idiot.
At that point, nobody cares if you aren't or aren't. For that one moment, you were, and you deal with the consequences of that.
Although, you know, I just wish it was something more popular than Fallout 76, because it's sort of like, well, you can't play Fallout 76 anymore. What a pity. You know. And, you know, Blizzard had the same problem with Overwatch in the console version of, you know, in their console versions. They didn't have it. They had to add it. Now, Bethesda was weak sauce. They said, Fallout 76 empowers players to permanently block other players. Yeah, that doesn't solve the fucking problem. You know, they're being harassed. And Pete Hines kept on going up and down. You know, there won't be any griefing in this game. Well, yeah, just having deaths be a slap on the wrist in the game is not a way to defeat griefing. So, yeah, I mean, but you know, I'm not even going to blame Bethesda for this. I'm going to blame ZeniMax, because ZeniMax doesn't know what the fuck it's doing. For those of you who don't know, ZeniMax is the publisher that owns Bethesda.
Yeah.
This is why you need public servers, private servers.
This is why
servers,
you need actual people in the game.
Yeah.
You know, remember World of Warcraft used to have moderators in-game who were actually playing the game. Now we have, here's the problem that I have with Ubisoft's Rainbow Six Siege thing. You know, it's fine, but you're still automating something that should be humanly curated, you know?
Well, that's what it is, Jonah. Didn't you hear the...
Yeah, I know, but as it's playing, as you're actually... They should have people in the game, you know? And people might know, well, it's going to cost... Yeah, it's going to cost money, but guess what? They're making money hand over fucking fist. You know, take $500,000, hire 20 people at $50,000 a year, even just, you know, hell, you can pay a minimum wage and hire 100 people, you know, and just do it.
No, I mean, like, I feel like they're doing it right.
They're doing it okay.
They're
doing it right
with
the human, what's it called, moderation.
What it does for a lot of Ubisoft stuff is it pulls up the match and it pulls up the instance, and so they have the context there in front of them.
You know, and more games should record, you know, if you have a game that that has matches like Counter-Strike, you know, or, you know, that have a beginning and an end to every match, yeah, I mean, there should be a way just to copy everything from that, have it for 24 hours before it's erased, and, you know, sort of like a security camera, you know?
Sure. And then they got a team that basically is dedicated to looking over this stuff and giving the yay or the nay on whether it was just a misunderstanding.
Actual people who are in the game at the time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for an open world RPG, that seems easier. I don't see how you could do that outside of what they're doing for a first person shooter match.
When all you have to do is report, and you know, when I did a report early years of World of Warcraft, I haven't played recently, so I don't know if they still have it. They had volunteers, other players, who you can complain to.
Yeah, there were admin players.
Yeah, you could complain to them, and if they could actually see what was going on, and if they thought something, they would pick it up, you know. You should have, and it doesn't even have to be admin players, it just could be people who are admins, period.
I just feel like that's less easy to do.
No, it just costs a little money.
In a game where you have only ever have 10 players at a time, and maybe a couple more people spectating, and like you don't really have people jumping in or out of matches. They're just in the match until they're done, and then they all leave. So that's where I'm saying it seems a little bit harder for me to think of how that would feasibly work as opposed to like an open world game.
It could work, but you know,
where you just jump into the server,
you know. Unlike Riot Games, who are not only not doing anything, but actually doing it in their own offices.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, here's the thing. This is before you ever went to E3, but for like 3 years, Riot Games had the best fucking parties at E3. I mean, bar food for free. You know, burgers, wings, fries, you know, sliders, and all the beer you could drink. I don't drink beer, but, you know. I mean, you would have been in heaven. This would have been beer and bar food all night, just partying and chatting up with the devs in, you know, face to face. You know, I can't, you know, and this sort of sours those memories a little bit. At least I know the people at Devolver Digital are really good guys. I could never imagine them ever be acting like that. Then again, they're not a... Here's the thing, you know, Riot Games wants to act cool and outrageous. Devolver Digital is cool and outrageous. They don't have to pretend. They are outsiders and they love it. Just read any of their press releases.
Yeah, I mean, like, their E3 appearances are always some of the best things ever.
Yeah, because they're off. For one thing, they're not in E3. They're in the parking garage outside of E3.
Yeah,
the same parking garage too.
Doing their retro console that doesn't actually exist, and they murder people on while they're doing it.
No, they change it every year. There's something different every year. I mean, what the best thing though is that when I go there, they have their huge 60-inch or maybe it's an 80-inch screen, and they're always playing one of their games, and it's really fun because developers' kids are there playing them, so you can watch the developers' kids play. You know, and it's always fun to watch kids play one of Devolver Digital's games. You know, like the monkey, the one in which you're a monkey trying to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And you just splatter people.
Man,
some good mauling in that game. And I'm thinking, you know, watching these kids play. Yeah, these kids are going to be developers when they grow up. You can already tell they're going to be developers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like I said, good for Ubisoft. I mean, most of their games are shit right now. Everything's an open world game. But at least, you know, they know what they're doing. You see, here's the thing. Rainbow Six Siege is not an open world game. So they actually pay attention to it and deal with it. All their open world games, the Assassin's Creeds and the fucking Division games, you know, they're sort of like on autopilot. Rainbow Six Siege actually feels like there's actually people working on it.
Yeah, it does. Like, and like, I know a few of those people. Like,
well, now you do. I introduced you to a fucking lead developer.
Yes. And in my time as an esports writer, I've had a chance to meet more of them, and they're good people. Like, they really do have a. And Rainbow Six Siege is an interesting esports and competitive community where, like, everyone in there feels more, I'm not going to say more genuine than other scenes, but, like, they really are giving it their all in
okay,
there.
Okay, no, I have the word for you that you're probably going to like. They're more invested in the game.
That's a good one, yeah. I mean,
because,
like,
here's the thing, you know, remember, Rainbow Six Siege had a terrible first year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the people who played it, you know, who actually enjoyed what they were seeing from it, just wanted as hard as the developers to see it succeed. And, you know, developers worked hard and they made it succeed. So now they're invested in it, you know.
Yeah.
Which is why you can probably see Siege last for a very long time.
It'll probably never be as big as, like, Counter-Strike GO or...
Yeah, but here's the thing, you know.
Or Overwatch.
Thanks for the Toxicity update for Rainbow Six Siege, but if there's ever a game that needed a twat, you know, a twat fumigation, it would be Counter-Strike.
That's what I'm saying, though, is that, like, Rainbow Six Siege will probably never be as big as, like, Counter-Strike GO or Overwatch, but dang if it doesn't feel like more, like, everyone in there is more invested and genuine and trying their best to make this thing work than anywhere else.
You know what game you don't hear about much, even though it still has an active user base, and that's Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, I really do think that has to do with Overwatch, though.
Yeah, but it still has a healthy player base who haven't gone over to Overwatch. You know, because let's face it, the characters in Team Fortress 2 beat every other character in every other shooter game. Just perfection in terms of character design and personality. That's why you had the heavy in Poker Night. You know. Yeah, the sandwich. Mm-hmm. This is Sasha. Each bullet costs $50, and this gun fires 250,000 bullets an hour. No. Every time I fired the gun, it cost $250,000. Yeah, I mean, everybody loves the heavy because he has Sasha.
I was always big on the spy.
You know, actually, I actually prefer the Scout. Mainly because I always played the Scout in Team Fortress 2, because I like being fast and having that baseball bat and just boinking people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to admit, I did like being the Pyro, simply because it was my job just to burn spies. That's my job, burn spies. Yeah, get that weak shit out of here. You're going to be on fire now. There's nothing more satisfying than hiding and being able to catch one or two spies trying to grab your briefcase. Yeah, nice try, assholes. Now you smell like burning flesh. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
Yep. So, Scott, prediction. Do you think the Mayans are going to be the ones that are going to be introduced next week?
I hope so. I'm sure that they will get introduced. I don't know if it'll be next week, but I hope so. I look forward to it.
I mean, the other one that's rumored is Eleanor of Aquitaine. Or actually, Portugal. Portugal still hasn't been announced either. Yeah, I mean, this is the fun time, you know, the fun time before February hits and the game is actually released. And so far, you know, the Civ that I'm looking most to is Canada. I mean, like I said, farms and tundras.
That will be nice, and it is a nice build-up, too, having all these Civs released one by one to, you know, tease you and give you an idea of what's coming. It's fun, yeah.
TJ would probably just take Canada because it has an ice rink in it. He just wants the hockey. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.